now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, our very special guest is Belinda Noakes. Belinda is the Courage Mentor. She helps people find the courage to finish with karmic imprints and patterns using tools based on universal lore, the natural lore governing the universe. She works with people who are here to help heal the heart of our planet, creatives, healing practitioners, and new paradigm entrepreneurs. Her website is BelindaNoakes.com. Belinda and then Noakes, NOAKES.com, all one word. So without any further ado, Belinda Noakes, how are you?
I'm really well, James. Thanks for having me on the show.
The pleasure is all ours, Belinda. For the benefit of our listeners, could you tell us a bit about yourself and how you got into this work? And, you know, the stages that led you to this point where you decided, this is what I want to do.
I guess in contrast to some of the people that I've heard on your show before, I haven't been doing this work for 20 years. I had a whole, what feels like somebody else's life now, a corporate career working for a software multinational and living internationally and living a pretty big and fast-paced life. And then, as many people do, I got very, very tired. So tired that I needed to take some years out to really rebuild my body, my being, and my life from the ground up. And I was really fortunate to be able to do that. So this work has come out of my own healing journey. Yeah. I got pretty interested in why I was constantly looking for new modalities and tools, because what I experienced is something that I hear fairly often from people, that they'll have a breakthrough with a healing practitioner and the effects of it will last for a while, but then it gradually kind of recedes. And so I was, for myself, always looking for new tools and techniques and approaches that felt like they would go deeper. The tools that I use with people now and the approaches that I use with people, the tools that I found in my own journey that work best, that have worked best for me so far, I always stay open to new things, new tools, new approaches. I came to believe that the layer at which karmic imprints and patterns exist, it is a layer that feels, words are imperfect, right? But it feels deeper even than the energetic layers. And so what I've found for myself through my own inner work and the work that I've done with clients in the last few years, that using tools that seem able to intervene at that layer a bit more naturally seems to produce faster and more long-lasting results for people. And, you know, I'm not claiming kind of one session miracles always for all people, right? Although it has happened. I've found some things that worked for me and that seem to work well for other people, certainly for some other people who they resonate for. And so, you know, I've had a pretty interesting journey over the last 6-7 years. I mean, we could expand it out to 10, but since I left my corporate job is about 7 years ago now, and I went right through some major chunks of new age healing and I've kind of popped out the other side.
How did you stumble upon this? Was it something that you brought with you? It was part skill set you brought with you, perhaps from a previous incarnation or incarnations, maybe combined with things you picked up along the way in the corporate world? And how did you apply it to yourself? What parts of your life did you see that you felt that needed some work, and how did you apply that?
That's a great question, James. So what's interesting for me is that, you know, while I have a couple of therapeutic, explicitly therapeutic techniques that I use, which we can talk about in a minute, the piece that I bring and that I'm constantly, you know, refining and developing is An ability to see patterns. It's my mind is like a pattern recognition engine to some extent. So it's kind of fascinating that I worked in the IT industry and in software for, you know, years, and was, you know, immersed in the world of artificial intelligence. And I now understand that that's partly because aspects of my inner intelligence are actually geared that way. I have this weird kind of X-ray vision that allows me to talk to somebody for a relatively short period of time, say 5 minutes or so, and I can, it's like I can see the surface level symptoms that are showing up in their life, and I can see or get a sense of the deeper underlying patterns or blueprints that those surface symptoms are anchored to or rooted to. I can't even really explain how it happens, James, because it's not something, it's not a skill that I have consciously and deliberately cultivated. It's something that some time ago I just noticed was happening when I did sessions with people. And I noticed that it happens more and more, and the time that it takes for me to recognize underlying patterns seems to get shorter and shorter. Most of the time, people will say to me things like, I didn't tell you anything about my childhood. How did you know that? It's just information that comes to me. And, you know, I want to be clear that I'm not working with angels or ascended masters or any kind of external forces. What I'm doing in these sessions is, when I work with people, is allowing my greater being and theirs, my soul and theirs, whatever language you want to use, to, it's almost like laying a trail of breadcrumbs, and then I just follow them.
Well, I like the way you describe your title, if you will, that you're a courage mentor, because it implies that you allow these people to peel back the layers that you've intuited are there, get to the underlying problem, and then you kind of activate, you kind of actualize their own internal navigator so they can take hold of the reins, they can take hold of the steering wheel and begin in this courage mentorship you were describing to be able to take control of their own life.
Understanding that I've come to through doing my own work and working with clients is that we know, right, that it's time to take it's useful to take responsibility for the fact that we co-create our experiences. But when you actually really start to tune into what that means in the context of clearing or healing things that are standing in your way, my view is that pretty much the most empowering step that we can take is to increase the level of responsibility that we take to a pretty radical level. So really deeply acknowledging that, not at the level of the human drama, of course, but at the level of our greater beings, of our souls, we really do co-create all of our experiences. We co-created all of this. And what that means, James, is that we chose at the soul level to submit to certain dark forces of limitation in order that we could learn to more fully embody our light. When we get that kind of understanding, there's a really interesting invitation then to drop any remaining residue of victim stories and victim positions. And then we can really step forward from a place of true power. So my intention in working with people is never to do any work for them. Yeah, I'm really a facilitator. I don't call myself a healer. I don't love the word because it has connotations of me doing something to somebody else.
Yes.
I don't do anything. What I do is facilitate people getting access to wisdom that is stored inside them. but often obscured by layers of trauma.
And does this trauma sometimes stem from not just earlier in childhood or earlier in life, but also from other incarnations and other existences?
Yeah, sure. I mean, again, my experience is that the current incarnation will encapsulate everything that's gone before. So sometimes it's really, really useful, and in fact, sometimes it's essential to come to conscious awareness of a specific, what you call, past life event or scenario, or a multidimensional event or scenario. Sometimes it's a critical part of the healing process for us to actually become aware, consciously aware in our conscious mind, of something that has happened before, and because that's a key to reconciling with the pain and resolving it. Other times it's not necessary to do that. So, you know, I don't work with formulas, and I don't have a set blueprint for a session, for example. This is partly what I meant by, you know, allowing the greater being to leave a trail of breadcrumbs. Yeah. We'll work with whatever shows up. And for some people, we can do childhood work from this lifetime, and it will ripple through all of the attachments. For other people, we'll be able to trace back further, or we will need to go to some other specific event. And again, words are imperfect, time is tricky, but sometimes you need stuff to ripple forwards, and sometimes it can ripple backwards.
Yes. When the person is in this process with you, do sometimes they begin to remember more, or do they sometimes have some kind of insights or some kind of like download, if you will, that kind of helps the process along? Because you mentioned a moment ago you were more like a facilitator. Do you see that process unfold sometimes?
Yeah, absolutely. I have had people, you know, spontaneously remember all sorts of interesting and sometimes kooky things. You know, I've done some work with people who have had experiences with PSYOPs and MYOPs programming, and some people who experienced satanic ritual abuse and other extreme childhood abuse. I'm really fascinated, to be honest, by the way that for some people it seems essential to remember things that they've forgotten, sometimes things that they were programmed to forget. And other times it seems not to matter. And I can only assume, James, that A, you know, remembering everything in this lifetime isn't necessary, isn't essential in order to take some kind of next step. And that B, maybe some of us have remembered before and we don't need to remember it all again. To be honest, it's still a bit of a mystery to me. But it does seem to be really specific and unique for every person. So I don't try to force anything. But yes, sometimes people will spontaneously get quite a big opening to a body of memories that they had not accessed before, or to an aspect of themselves that they had not been in connection with before.
As far as an aspect of themselves that they may not have been consciously aware of, could sometimes that take the form of maybe either in this life, because of blocked trauma memories, they're remembering things that they did that they're loath to admit even to themselves they did, or maybe even in a past life sense where things open up for them and they realize, golly, maybe I was kind of an unpleasant person in a past life and it's kind of come back to haunt me.
I've seen it all, James. I've had people remember lifetimes and lifetimes of victimization, and sometimes in the same session, to see an event that in terms of linear time predates all of those, that was kind of the trigger for that pattern laying down. And it's, you know, pretty common for me to work with somebody for a little while, and you know, there's lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes of persecution, and then at some point we arrive at an awareness of a kind of a critical inflection point, or almost a decision point, where the pendulum swung. Somebody in a particular incarnation did something, in inverted commas, bad, and then the soul chose to turn the tables, to reverse the flow, and to experience the opposite. So, you know, for example, I've had people remember being part of the crew of magicians who blew up Atlantis.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, remembering, really, really reconnecting with what it was like to participate in the near destruction of the human race. And then afterwards, to have recollections of multiple instances, and to have experiences in this lifetime of really getting to feel what it's like to have your humanity almost destroyed.
As far as one's empathy, as far as one's conscious is concerned, conscious, yes.
And also to, I mean, we experience all of it, right, in our journey through this universe, we experience both being the conqueror and the conquered.
Yes. Because I've had incarnations where I was helping to expand some rather tyrannical regimes and empires here on Earth. So that is something that I've had to wrestle with, this inner shadow that I know that I could have to become an ally with and not let it become an adversary.
Yeah, and we get to be both the bully and the victim, right?
Yes.
That's, at some point, we get to play both parts. And it really starts to loosen the hold of the victim story once you can get in touch with the inner bully. Yeah. the victim stuff starts to get more difficult to hold onto and hold so tightly and kind of roll around in once you start to get in touch with the flip side of it.
Yes, because the emotion and the emotional addiction of being a victim, there's an emotional energetic component to that. There's like a brainwave pattern to that, which these archontic forces strive to promote and strive to embed within the people. So once the switch has been turned and say, oh, you know, I mean, the shoe was on the other foot. I was the one holding the whip hand at one time. Then it provides some kind of perspective.
Well, yeah. And I mean, what I see regularly, James, is how the forces of limitation, and it seems to be at all levels, you know, both the multidimensional kind of, you know, non-incarnate beings, and also the you know, the physical tangible, like the military industrial complex and the MIOPS operations, I mean, they construct programming for us that is perfectly tweaked to our particular smorgasbord of wounding and trauma. And they what they do, James, is that they, you know, their agenda is about control, right? And they like to feed off pain and suffering, so they kind of create drama. But what they do is they teach us to do their job for them.
Yes.
So we get into this position where, without even realizing it, we're the ones who are recreating our own prison every day and in every moment. And we don't realize that the prison has, you know, we've gotten to the point where the prison is actually largely self-created, not just co-created, largely self-created, because we've, you know, the space within which we operate has just gradually gotten sort of smaller and smaller around us, until eventually we're kind of standing in this tiny little paddock with an electric fence around it, and we no longer even challenge the boundaries of our own prison.
Have you seen instances when someone in a past life incarnation, they may have interacted with someone, and it could be an extreme example of someone who was a high priest or someone who was a sibling who was really narcissistic and abusive or whatever the case may be. And then in this life, those characters incarnate back. Sometimes we make the mistake of assuming that just because someone's in our particular soul group, they're necessarily there to help us to change and to grow. When actually, they're there with a cattle prod in some instances, right? Have you seen instances where people realize that, oh, I remember where this person comes from, and they, you know, land and they wind up being my sibling or my uncle or something, and then they have to learn to detach, because we've been taught in our society, no, you have to hang on to family, to kingdom come. It doesn't matter what's going on, you have to stick with your family.
Well, yeah, and there's a whole set of, you know, New Agey myths around acceptance and forgiveness,
yes.
Right? You know, that says that if you're really highly evolved, then you will be able to forgive and accept anyone and anything, and, you know, come to a state of kind of peace with that. Continue to have them in your field, right? And if you get bothered by them, then that's your stuff, yeah. Sometimes the lesson that we're meant to learn from these interactions is about reclaiming the power away. And, you know, I'm not talking about judgment and condemnation, right? Sometimes the opportunity for growth, for soul expansion that people offer us in a particular lifetime or a particular scenario is precisely the opportunity to learn to take care of ourselves better.
Yes.
You know, to get healthier and clearer about self-care and boundaries and what that actually means in a really practical, tangible sense when you're navigating, you know, family relationships, for example.
What I've seen sometimes, Belinda, in our field is there are some gals out there, and I'm not picking on men here, I'm just using it as an example. There are some gals that are very switched on. They are natural empaths. They're very good at nurturing and upholding and uplifting others. But because of whatever past imprints that has been foisted upon them, this kind of codependency sub-program kicks in, and then they wind up getting stuck with these really narcissistic, you know, controlling, abusive men. And I say, man, she's a wonderful gal. She's so uplifting and nurturing in all these other areas of her own life, but she's got this guy as an anchor kind of pulling her down. And that's very common in our field.
Absolutely. Well, and I mean, there's all of these different dimensions to wounding, right?
Yes.
I mean, there's stuff that we carry as individuals from this lifetime, right? And given the prevalence of particularly sexual abuse of children on this planet at this time, there are a lot of people, both women and men, and certainly a lot of women, carrying a lot of scar tissue around childhood sexual abuse. If it's unresolved and not completely healed, creates all kinds of behavioral distortion. Then there's stuff that we get, you know, that's ancestral. We get it in our DNA, literally,
yes.
You know, by virtue of the birth family that we chose to come into. And then there's collective stuff. And even my experience myself and with a lot of the women that I work with is that there's a pain around the experience of being female on this planet for the last X thousand years that mirrors the pain that the Earth, who is a female feminine being, that the pain that she herself carries. And there are a lot of women on the planet who seem to mirror a lot of the Earth's pain in
yes.
their own bodies. And we're not always aware that that's what's going on, and we're certainly not always aware of it in the moment, yeah? So it's incredibly tricky, this process of sorting through, you know, what stuff is and where it's coming from and therefore how to approach it and how to move through it. Yeah, I mean, I've seen this thing that I call the daddy wound, which is which is something that a lot of women seem to have, which is a wound around betrayal by the wounded masculine, the distorted masculine. Yeah. And that certainly is related to pain that the earth carries around betrayal by and abuse by the wounded masculine. And men carry their own wounding around betrayal and often emasculation by the wounded feminine. Yeah. I mean, there's some pretty unhealthy dynamics have developed on this planet over the last few thousand years.
Especially in the wake of all this social engineering where the males are being continually emasculated, where I don't want to use words like traditional roles or fall into stereotypes, but the males that are being promoted by Hollywood and by the entertainment industry is kind of like a caricature of what a male should be. Instead of being someone who's protective of the family, protective of their partner, they depict them as being unable to even figure out which end of the hammer to hold. And then they show the women in... It's a complete distortion what we're seeing, Belinda, in the whole family structure. And that's a part and parcel of this whole archontic manipulation process.
Yeah, totally agree, James. It's a tricky business.
It is.
Figuring, you know, getting clear on what's actually true, right? I mean, we seem to live in a world that is 99% false.
It is. Now, subject of SRA, satanic ritual abuse, is a very touchy one because, there's many people out there who pass themselves off as therapists or well-meaning people who really are not aware of the internal dynamics of the programming and the multiple personality structuring within people. So try as they might to be helpful, they trigger the hell out of some of these people, you know, just by talking to them and even by using their body language incorrectly. So keeping that all in mind and bearing in mind the fact that there are people listening, you know, in varying degrees of recovery and reintegration, when you work with people that are, and you identify in your own mind that they are SRA, what are some of the layers that seem to be, I wouldn't say a commonality, but what are some of the layers or energetic blocks or emotional blocks that seem to, once they're safely moved, seem to create the opportunity, the space for more healing and more integration?
Yeah.
Keeping in mind that it's difficult to quantify these things, right?
It is. Yep, it is. And, you know, I want to preface all of this, James, by saying that I don't claim to be anything like a specialist in SRA. Yeah, I work with who shows up to work with me. And I've had a number of individuals now show up with this kind of scenario. And what seems to have worked in a few kind of basic principles, right? So you asked me about remembering before, yeah? Whenever I work with anyone who's experienced any kind of sexual or ritualized abuse, I do not go looking for memories and I do not encourage them to do that. Any remembering happens spontaneously. So because I don't want to re-traumatize anybody, yes. And I don't believe it's necessary to do that in order for healing to occur, and in fact it's the opposite. Re-traumatization is profoundly unhelpful for healing, in my experience. What I do notice, and of course, I mean, this is why this kind of abuse gets used to program people, right, is that it forces us out of our bodies. It forces people into creates a dissociated state.
Yes.
And pushes people at least into the head and oftentimes just completely out of the body. So I tend to focus certainly in the, you know, in the early stages on the fear of being in the body. Yeah. So we're not actually dealing with anything related to explicitly to the abuse scenario. You know, my intention is actually to get more of the awareness anchored in the body and to reconnect the different components of intelligence, so the kind of intelligence that lives in the head, the brain, what we typically think of as the mind, and the kind of intelligence that resides in the gut, and the intelligence that resides in the heart. So to reconnect those and get them working as more like an integrated system or as a team again. And then when those foundations are more solidly in place, then there's actually some space for more of the soul's light or the greater being to be in the body.
Yes.
Yeah. And from there, my experience, James, is that the love that your soul has for you is your perfect medicine. It's not my perfect medicine, it's yours. And my soul's love is not your perfect medicine, it's mine. So really what I like to do with people is to facilitate removing, clearing, moving aside the veils that obscure our natural light from shining through us and out of us into the world. And what makes the veils is conditioning, traumatic experiences, scar tissue.
That's a very good point. I was reading this book about one of the founding fathers of the British Special Air Service in World War II, and near the end of the book, they talked to a veteran of the SAS in World War II, and these army psychologists, who must have been Tavistock, they got a hold of this guy, and they compelled him through narcohypnosis to relive the trauma over and over and over again, and he said it shattered him. This is a guy who survived World War II fighting against the Axis, and that wasn't even enough for them. They got a hold of him, and they re-traumatized him again and again. And another point about the embodiment, that's a wonderful point, Belinda, because to varying degrees, this system teaches us to be disembodied, teaches us to be too far into our headspace. And so the collective trauma at all different levels, whether it's these incessant, you know, terror alerts on TV and all, you know, and the real trauma people are physically subjected to, psychologically subjected to, we begin to detach more and more as a coping dissociative mechanism. But your methodology teaches people to safely create space within them so they can, using that triune you were talking about, the heart center, the abdominal intelligence center, etc., to reintegrate in a holistic, healthy way. I love that.
You know, what I've noticed is that, you know, I really try to avoid creating any kind of dependency in the people that I work with, right? You know, I want to facilitate just as much work as we need to in order for them to go and just live their life, yeah? When the soul is no longer hovering outside the body, when the soul can actually be in the body, at least at times, then life starts to unfold more organically. And the soul will show us what's ready to get cleared, and you can work through stuff, you know, outside of a formal therapeutic setting, right? You don't need practitioners to facilitate for you anymore when you've actually got your greater being working as your primary therapeutic facilitator. That's kind of how I like to think about it, right? Is that my soul is my primary therapist. And sometimes she shows me that I need to do a bit of work with a particular practitioner, that's really useful at a particular point in time. And increasingly, you know, more and more of the time, I just live my life and stuff comes up and I move through it. And it's certainly more empowering to live that way, and it's also cheaper.
Oh, yes. Oh, some of these therapists and how much they charge, they just fleece people, and they really, you know, the clients really don't improve.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly experienced that. And, you know, I certainly have experienced the flip of that as well, the flip side of that, you know, where I've invested some money to work with somebody and it's proven to be incredibly useful. There seems to be a direct correlation for me in terms of my own healing path, that whenever I made a decision to work somebody from my head whenever I made a kind of an intellectually mind-driven decision, it didn't work out so well. When I found someone, I came across someone who I felt a really strong heart resonance with, and I just kind of felt in my body that it was the right thing at the right time, that generally worked out better. And so I talk to everybody that I work with before I work with them, and I always look for the heart resonance on both sides. If it doesn't feel exactly right, then it's not the right thing at the right time.
Yes, that's a very enlightened way of looking at it, because too many people are just out to make a buck. They may feel at a not even very deep level that there's not much I can do for this person, but I'm going to work with them anyway, you know, and just, you know, throw the cards out there. Now, you'd mentioned earlier that some of the clients that you've come across there was a military overlay, a military black ops overlay, and there at times there is some enmeshment, some crossing over between the SRA and the military aspect, and sometimes there's a military aspect that is very much of a weird science ET orientated nature. Mm-hmm. Have you seen that in your practice as well, where people come to you and you kind of can tell that they're not quite SRA, there's something else going on with them, and it's not necessarily coming from a human origin?
Oh yeah, I've worked with a number of people who actually have some degree of recollection. What seems to be usually combined ET and military abductions.
Yes.
And then who actually have, you know, who come in reporting some conscious memory of experimentation of various kinds. Yeah, some of it's more overtly kind of physical, and some of it's more overtly psychological. There certainly do seem to be specific groups of extraterrestrials who work very closely with military groups here on the planet. They're very curious about how we respond physically and emotionally when they play with our thoughts.
Yes, because, you know, thoughts are things in the spirit world, and then when they bounce around in our minds like an echo chamber through OCD thought manipulation, that leads to negative emotions. If it's because they're not going to bounce thoughts around in our heads of like serenity and contentment and inner harmony. It's quite the opposite.
Where would be the fun in that, right?
I know. And when these people come to you and then you recognize that particular overlay, what does it seem, besides the emotional content that the ETs and the military are trying to extract out of these people, do you notice that they're trying to engender some kind of maybe some kind of latent attributes or abilities within these people? Maybe there's a psychic component to these people. Maybe there's a metaphysical component that they're trying to extract, or are they trying to keep it purely on the physical level?
That's an interesting question. I don't know that I've worked with anybody yet. Actually, that's not true. I have had a couple of people who have come to me after they've spent some years of working through, working through some abduction scenarios and some abuse scenarios, and who have had access to a few pretty interesting psychic abilities, for example, mm-hmm. who then report coming to see that those psychic abilities were actually the product of the conditioning.
Mm.
And as they then started to get to the root trauma and sort of unwind reconcile with the pain of the abuse scenario or the abductions, that the profile of their gifts starts to shift. They lose some things and they gain some other things. I could only speculate, James, about whether certain gifts get deliberately suppressed and others created or amplified. Who knows? I'm not clear on that yet.
At least in my discussions with people that have gone through my lab experiences, it seems at times, and, you know, this is not a blanket statement or an absolute ludicrous statement, but it seems at times that these military controllers and the ETs they're in league with seem to be able to engender certain abilities, latent abilities within people, and it seems to be state specific, state of being specific, and state of mind specific. And back in their normal waking consciousness, they can't do some of those things. Or if they happen, it's more of a spontaneous kind of thing. They may be gifted, they may be able to give people readings, but not to the extreme they would when these ex abilities are kind of forcibly extracted from them.
The one thing that I would say, James, that seems to be a pretty consistent theme, both in my own experience of mind control programming and, I mean, just garden variety, not my ops or psyops that I'm aware of, and in the people that I work with, is that they really don't want us to be connected to our bodies, and they really don't want us to be connected to the earth and to nature.
Yes.
So, I mean, I'd be speculating, but it seems almost reasonable to speculate that if there's gifts being created, then they might be the ones that tend to kind of take our awareness up and out,
Yes.
rather than down and in.
Yes, get us more disembodied, get us more into our headspace. And unfortunately, many people, especially in the New Age movement, they fall for that. This notion of having to vibrate at a higher frequency, this notion of ascension, when we're here to be embodied, we're here to be plugged into Mother Earth, and through Mother Earth, through the organic source of which we are part and parcel anyway. And so the point you made about detaching us from nature also, it's look how people have been herded as if in a big corral into the cities, and look how they intentionally distort a lot of these natural ley lines and natural dragon lines, telluric lines of energy. They put weird kind of monuments there. They desecrate it in various and sundry ways, and they generally create this big distortion pattern for to immerse all of us in.
That movement of up and out is totally glorified by most of the New Age. That energetic movement up and
Yes.
out of our up and out of our bodies
Yes.
is regarded as evidence of spiritual maturity. It's some kind of accomplishment that is seen to, as reason to be admired,
Yes, it's bizarre.
which is sad.
It is sad. It's sad and it's bizarre because they're divesting themselves of the gift of embodiment, right? Of instead, they're opting for dissolution. They're opting for nothingness, right? So it really is sad. Now, in the time we've got left, and it's been a fascinating first hour, Belinda, I'd like to ask you, as far as the military aspect is concerned, and in a therapeutic healing aspect, what seem to be the big stumbling blocks that you've identified, the layers, if you will, which once safely removed from people that have gone through this military overlay, that space is created that allows reintegration and healing to take place.
There'd probably be three, and a couple of them I've already spoken about. The being embodied, it's a big one
Oh, yeah.
for humans right now. For being willing to actually be here on the planet as a human. The second one would be, it feels to me like a deliberate distraction, right? We've talked about, in inverted commas, past lives and multidimensional aspects and things here today. I want to be really clear that there is not necessarily an intrinsic greater value in remembering and reconciling those experiences than in actually coming to terms with what has happened in this lifetime on this planet. Sometimes when I work with people, there's some work to do around kind of just reining in that tendency to chase that stuff, to chase that
Yes.
remembering.
Yes.
Because it can actually be a big fat distraction. Start here, start now. Keep remembering your childhood. And if the rest of it is meant to come, it'll come. So that tendency to try to kind of leapfrog this current lifetime because it's more interesting, to go back 1,000 years is an interesting one that I encounter sometimes. when people get started on a healing journey, that's often the kind of subtle messages that they get. Everything's about past lives, and if you just can remember all of those, then that'll clear everything up. Yes. Sometimes it's true. Sometimes it's true. More often it's not true, is what I would say. The other big one is about acknowledging the co-created nature of the experience. Mm-hmm. I can't stress enough how significant it seems to be for us to come to the understanding that even though quote-unquote bad things may have been done to us, we then kept on living our lives. And even though we weren't perfectly at choice in terms of how we responded or reacted to trauma, there comes a point where you can actually be more at choice than, for example, you were as a child. Then there's a decision about how you want to respond from this point onwards and whether you're actually ready and willing to let go of feeling victimized.
That's a biggie. And the other point you made about the past lives too, I'm aware of some of my past lives, and I'm also conscious of the fact that we are the sum of all of our parts. So now that we're here in embodiment and within our morphic resonance field, within our DNA, we've got it all going on. So a lot of people spend a lot of time chasing down past life readers, chasing down all that kind of information, and it can turn into a distraction. It's helpful insofar as if one wants to find out where we get some of our habits or kind of, you know, our way of being, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but insofar as healing is concerned, it can definitely turn into a big distraction because people take their eyes off the prize, being embodied, healing within, staying grounded, and then they go chasing off after these past incarnations. Quite a distraction. And the point you made about owning up to the, you know, the reality that we are co-creators too, because if I had not had quote-unquote negative experiences, I wouldn't be doing this show. We wouldn't be talking. I wouldn't have made the wonderful friends that I've made. I just been, and I'm not passing a value judgment on others that don't have our level of awareness, but I would just be like with the rest of the mob, just doing my thing and living day to day. And so I see these quote unquote negative experiences as, I see them as a means to kind of goad me into kind of improving myself, goad me into healing, and goad me into working on myself before I can even presume to want to help and reach out to others. So I'm thankful that I've had these things.
And that's, you know, in my experience, James, that's one of the keys to actually being able to move on, to actually being able to finish with the patterns that repeat through our lives, is being able to get to the point where we can, not in a Pollyanna-ish New Age kind of
yes.
way, but actually sit in genuine gratitude for these beings who we agreed would show up to play certain roles for us and act as our personal trainers.
Yes, and it's like, one could call it negative motivation. Well, whatever works, right? Because we've had to develop coping mechanisms. Some of us that have had these intrusions from negative archontic beings of various stripes, we've had to learn to create energetic space for ourselves and not allow them to manipulate us mentally and energetically and whatnot. And also, you know, how they work through other people by slotting these different people into our lives through no fault of their own. They're in the matrix too, so I'm not passing judgment on them. But I look at all these things, Belinda, as a means for more growth and to push me and to goad me and challenge me in the right way so I can continue to grow, so I can continue to work on myself. Well, this has been a fascinating first hour, and I'm looking forward to the second hour. Could you tell our listeners, Belinda, how they can get a hold of you and what your website is?
Sure, yeah. All the information's on my website, which is just my name, Belinda, starting with a B, BelindaNoakes.com. Noakes is spelt N-O-A-K-E-S. You can find me on Facebook as well, but it's all on the website.
Well, you've been listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show with our very special guest, Belinda Noakes. If you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to our website, thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next hour.